Great Red Arms, give it your all.
We'll drink the wine to the cup is dry, and kiss the girls so they'll not cry, and toss the dice until we fly, and dance with Jack of the Shadows.
Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of Tales of a Red Arm. I'm your host, Justin, and today we're jumping into Chapter 38, Practice. This is a bit of a point of view shift from where we have been following Rand and company the last couple chapters and whatnot, so we're definitely jumping the opposite direction, kind of across the world a little bit. In different directions, without using a portal stone, ironically. So, the last episode / chapter was pretty much Rand and company using a portal stone to get from southeast of Kyrian, outside of Steading Sofu, all the way to the other side, the clear opposite side of the continent, to Tomon Het. There's some distrust between, well, not really between, distrust of Rand, or I should say Rand's distrust of Aes Sedai. Jeez, I can't even formulate that sentence, but you get what I'm saying. Rand distrusts Varen and all Aes Sedai because he's convinced they're trying to prop him up as a false dragon. And we went over a couple of things in the last episode that kind of explained why he should have thought a little harder about that, but here we are. So the beginning of chapter 38, we basically have Egwene practicing making three tiny balls of light and kind of like bouncing around her hands. I'd assume either in like a circular motion or like a juggling concept, but without actually like juggling it, and just kind of letting these balls twirl around and light up the room to a certain amount. But there's a lot of description about her white dress with the colored rings encircling the hem, basically showing that she's a novice of the White Tower. And she knows that in 13 weeks, because it's been how long she's been here, but in 13 weeks, she's realized it's easy to touch Sidar, and she can always feel it there. It's always ready, waiting for her to grab it. Or reach out to, I should say. And there's a lot of these descriptions used to kind of like pulling her in, because they're nice things. They're comfortable. They feel good. But pretty much once she touches it, she just pretty much just has to channel or even try, but it keeps kind of getting her going. Now, there's this one paragraph, it's like the second paragraph in, that I thought was very interesting because of the description it gives of what channeling is like and how to understand channeling and how it functions. So I'm gonna read it straight. It's nothing, no dialogue or anything, just straight up. It often frightened her. How much she wanted to channel frightened her, and how drab and dreary she felt when she was not channeling, compared to when she was. She wanted to drink it all in, despite the cautions about burning herself out, and that wanting frightened her most of all. Sometimes she wished she had never come to Tar Valon, but the fright could not make her stop for long, any more than the fear of being caught by an Aes Sedai, or by any of the accepted besides Nynaeve. So the act of channeling has this draw to it. It's like experiencing whatever, I guess, your favorite thing is. I'll use chocolate as an example, because it's like, if you have really, really good chocolate, to me, it's dark chocolate's the best. But if you have a different kind of chocolate or whatever, any other object, you'll hopefully understand what I'm saying. If you have chocolate, but someone's never eaten it, but then they eat chocolate and it's like the best thing ever. And then they start thinking about, you know what? I could really use some chocolate now. And they go and get some more chocolate. I could really use some chocolate right now. And they go and get more chocolate and they keep going back to it. But then it's just like, well, if I eat too much chocolate, I feel like I'm going to get fat. And then I'm, you know, not going to be able to do all these activities I like to do or spend time with my family the way I used to. So there's like that fear aspect, like too much is too much. And then there's the, but there's too much is not enough. And it kind of like brings you back to wanting it, but balancing it. And it kind of goes back to the theme of the series, which is balance. Side Eden and Side R balance each other. Men and women balance each other. They work together better than they do by themselves. Those constant themes that populate through the series. It's the fear of messing up and losing everything, like burning yourself out, but also the deliciousness of it that makes you want to keep going back to it despite that fear. So it puts you kind of like in that cautionary tale. And those who aren't cautious and don't balance those two things, because you shouldn't be afraid of it, because it's a wonderful thing. It's a great tool. It enhances your view of life, all those kind of things. But what you shouldn't let it do is be good all the time. It should frighten you that, you know, I have to be careful, otherwise I will lose this ability and or harm myself and others around me. But then simultaneously, you need to focus on, well, I can enjoy this. I don't have to be afraid of doing it all the time. So it's like a flip. It's a flip side where one side you got your, it's great. It's amazing. It's the best thing ever. And the other side's like, well, caution is good. Like, let's be careful with this because I want to keep being able to do this, not make it so it's permanently not possible. So in that regard, it's got that similar theme built into it, which I do like. And also, and this is just explaining that Egwene basically is breaking the rules right now. But she's like, well, it's fine in my own room. Min's there, you know, hanging out. And Min was not going to report or anything. The novices have a certain description of their quarters and whatnot. It's like 3 paces wide in every direction. Not a very big room. I think these rooms house 2 people, I believe. Considering how few novices there might be 1 per room, but they're not very big because you're not really meant to be in your room. You're meant to be out and about doing things, taking classes, learning things, doing chores, that kind of stuff. But Nynaeve has a bigger room because she's accepted. But she doesn't have any friends among the accepted, so she just comes to Egwene's room when she needs to talk to somebody. And even though she's not talking to anybody, she's still there. It's very, again, very small room, very descript. I mean, it's not, like, super, super hard to describe it, but it's not a very well-filled room. But essentially, in 13 weeks, this is the 3rd free day she's had since her and Nynaeve came to the tower. So in 13 weeks, they've had 3 free days. Which kind of makes sense, I suppose. Although I would imagine you'd at least get more extras, like in our society and whatnot. We're like, well, at least we get like 1 day of the week off, whether it be Saturday or Sunday or whatever. You think that's the kind of culture we live in. So I guess the White Tower culture is very, very, very different. But then Min, you know, pipes in, you know, like, Elsa was making calf eyes at Galad today while he was working with the warders. And Egwene's, you got these three little light balls in her hand rotating, and they kind of like falter for a second. And Egwene's like, well, she can look whoever she wants. I can't imagine why I would be interested. Trying to be all, you know, nonchalant about it. But it's like, I guess. He is awfully handsome, if you don't mind him being right all the time, rigid. He is very nice to look at, especially when his shirt is off. But then the balls in her hand start spinning even faster and faster. It's like, I certainly have no desire to look at Galad, with or without his shirt. And Min's like, oh, I shouldn't tease you. Sorry, but you do like to look at him. Don't grimace at me. And pretty much every woman in the White Tower who isn't a red link's looking at him. I've seen Aes Sedai down at the practice yards when he's working forms, especially, you know, the greens, checking on their waters, they say. But I don't see so many when Galad isn't there. Even the cooks and maids come out to watch him. The balls stop and don't move at all, and then Egwene just stares at him. And then they vanish, and then she giggles. Yeah, well, he is good-looking, right? Even if he walks like he looks like he's dancing, you know. Then she got a blush in her face, and he's like, well, I know I shouldn't stare, but I can't help myself. And Min's like, I can't either. I know what he's like. And he's like, well, if he's good, and he's like, okay, Galad is so good, he'll make you want to tear your hair out. He'd hurt a person just because he had to serve a greater good. He wouldn't even notice who was hurt, because he'd be so intent on the greater good. But if he did, he would expect you to understand, and that's all well and right. And Egwene's like, well, I guess you do know. And Min has the ability to obviously see people and whatnot, and kind of see their futures at some points. But even though she doesn't always know exactly what it means, she usually gets a pretty accurate translation of it, I guess. Then Egwene looks over at Nynaeve, and she's just pacing and muttering and whatnot, and Egwene just like, oh, whatever, and goes back to juggling. And Min's like, well, I mean, I might as well tell you. I mean, he didn't even notice what Elsa was doing. He asked her if she knew whether you might be walking the South Garden after supper, since today's a free day, and kind of felt sorry for her. And Egwene's like, oh, yeah, poor Elsa. And the balls of light become more livelier under hands, and Min laughs. The door bursts open, caught by the wind, and Egwene gives a yelp, and the balls vanish before she saw it was just Elaine. And, you know, the golden-haired daughter heir of Andor, Elaine Trakand, just pushes the door shut and hangs her cloak on the peg. It's like, I just heard. The rumors are true. King Galdrian is dead, and that makes a war of succession. So, if you were not aware, I do want to clarify this one line. This is the golden-haired daughter heir of Andor. She has kind of a rose-gold hair color, so it's like a light red, but also mixed with gold. And I guess he could have written the rose golden-haired, but it'd be kind of weird to do so. And there's other parts where it's referred to as, like, red, not gold. It's probably, I would guess, is the way the light catches it at the time gives it off a specific range of the color. She's not like a redhead and she's not a blonde. She's kind of like a mixture. Just to clear that up. But also, King Galdrian being dead, you know, that's kind of big news. And they've been there for several weeks, so you'd think news coming from Kyrian through trade would be a little bit faster. But I guess we can't assume things. Min's just like, oh yeah, civil war, man. War of succession. You know, a bunch of weird names for the same thing. And, if, I mean, we're hearing all about that stuff. War in Kyrian, war in Toman Head. It's all kind of the same thing. So, they might have caught the false dragon in Saldea. There's a war in Tyr. Most rumors. Then, you know, the cooks the other day were saying that she heard that Ardor Hawkwing was marching on Tanchico. Ardor Hawkwing. And Egwene's like, I thought you didn't want to talk about it. I gotta say, this is the one part I can really enjoy Egwene's character. And Elaine's like, well, I saw Loghain, and he's sitting on a bench in the inner court, crying. He ran away when I saw him, and I can't help but feeling sorry for him. Now, this is a strange thing because of Loghain and whatnot. Like, he's a pretty... Before he was gentle, he was very strong, ambitious, you know, I would say probably very stoic. But this kind of shows what gentling does to a man in terms of... It's going back to that chocolate reference. It's like finding out you could never, ever, ever taste chocolate again after reveling in it for so long in its fullness. You'd be swimming in like Willy Wonka's chocolate factories, chocolate rivers or whatever, and now you can't even like go in the building. You're locked out for good. Like it'd be devastating. And even a stoic person can get pretty much pulled to the ground when they're constantly teased by something that they can't have. Because when you're gentle, you lose your connection. It doesn't mean you can't know it's there. It's just you're constantly taunted by it, and you can't do anything about it. So, in this sense, it's not just, oh, boo-hoo, he's being an emotional whiny, but, you know, now he's actually being tortured for a long, long, long time. Like, there's a reason that a lot of people who get gentled when they're let back out into the world, they just die. They live for maybe a couple years and then they just give up on life. It's trying to find a way to fill that void, and that void is forever gone. So it's quite the it's quite the difficult discussion, I guess, in terms of trying to explain it the best, but hopefully what I tried made it a little bit nicer. But Min's like, well, at least he cries better than the rest of us. She's like, well, I know, but he's not anymore. He's not that person that we thought he was, or that he was. So I just can't help but feel sorry for him. But Egwene isn't thinking about Loghain per se. Every time she thinks about Loghain, she thinks of Rand, and she's worried about him. And she hadn't dreamed about him in months, and pretty much the only time he would dream is the kinds that you're not really wanting to have. Like what she did on the River Queen. But Anais Zedai is still kind of giving her, you know, little tests and whatnot to see if she's a dreamer and whatnot. Anais is just like, well, you're just missing him. Like, it's understandable. You grew up with him and he's far away and whatnot. But, you know, she's like, hey, did you get to see her? Well, I'm sitting here thinking about how nice Galad walks, and Rand is just, you know, possibly being caught and gentled or something of that nature. She's constantly worrying. But the thought of Rand being gentled and like weeping and wanting to die like Loghain is just a very uncomfortable thought for her. But Elaine sits down next to her and, you know, well, if you're mooning over Galad, you'll have no sympathy for me. I'll have Nynaeve dose you with one of those horrible concoctions she's always talking about. And she frowns at Nynaeve, who's still not paid attention, and he's like, what's up with her? Did she have, you know, she started sighing after Galad as well? And Min's like, I wouldn't bother her. The skinny accepted Irella, you know, told her she was as clumsy as a cow and had half the talents. And Nynaeve clouded her ear. And Elaine winced. It's like, yeah. And they had her up to Shiriam's study before you could blink. And she hasn't been, you know, someone fit to live with. And Min apparently didn't keep her voice quiet enough, because then there's a growl from Nynaeve. And then the door whips open again. But Min kind of like toppled on the stool and it rolls against the wall, and the wind died, and Nynaeve stood with a stricken look on her face, and Egwene looks out and doesn't see anything going on, but the novices are kind of taking advantage of the free day and checking on sleep and whatnot. She closes the door and, you know, sits next to Elaine, and Nynaeve helps Min to her feet, and Nynaeve's like, sorry, Min, my temper, can't ask you to forgive me, not for this. And she's like, if you want to report me to Shiriam, I'll understand. I deserve it. And Egwene wished she had not heard the admissions. Nynaeve could get prickly over these things. And she needs something to focus on. And Nynaeve pretty much had all of her attention touching Sidar. But Egwene just kind of goes back to juggling the balls of light. But Elaine pops her own balls of light up. And Egwene sees this glow form around the daughter heir before the three balls appeared in her hand. And this shows us that a woman who could channel can see another woman's embracing of the source, or the embracing of the one power. There are a couple exceptions of them. One of them we will get to later on in the series. One of them is, well, I guess both of them will technically get to the end part of the series, but there's a couple other things that are exceptions to this rule. But essentially, if you have any form of formal training and have been using the power, even a medium to moderate amount, you're going to be able to see basically a woman embrace Sidar and see the weaves, but only a woman could do this. So Rand channeling, no one's going to see Rand channel his weaves. Same thing goes for anybody else, where it's going to fit whoever is able to actively utilize this tool. So like somebody who's has a spark or whatnot in a village and is not familiar with channeling or anything with the one power at all isn't necessarily going to see an Aes Sedai when an Aes Sedai channels and be like, oh, she's glowing. No, she won't be able to notice it. So, you know, Egwene is joined by Elaine, and they practice their little three balls of light and whatnot. And the one power has this effect that it basically enhances the vividness of everything. So this little section just kind of shows a little bit more detail about what it feels like. And this is the very thing that is what is going to make that chocolate description I had earlier make so much sense. The one power filled Egwene with life. She smelled the faint rose aroma of soap from Elaine's morning bath. She could feel the rough plaster of the walls, the smooth stones of the floor, as well as she could the bed and where she sat. She could hear Min and Nynaeve breathe, much less their quiet words. So, just embracing the source increases your awareness of things. And it makes things more vibrant and more, I guess, alive. And that's the thing where you lose that when you get cut off from the source, whether it be by stilling or gentling. So it's an okay concept, but it's not something anybody would really wish on each other. And Min, because of this, is like, well, I mean, if we're going to be forgiving, maybe you should forgive me. I mean, you have a temper, but I have a big mouth. I will forgive you if you forgive me. And you get some, you know, forgiven and murmurs and stuff going on. And the women hug, and it's like, well, if you do it again, I might clout your ear. And Nynaeve's like, next time I'll throw something at you. But she's laughing, and, you know, her laughter, you know, stops as soon as she sees Egwene and Elaine. It's like, hey, you guys stop that, or there will be someone going to the Mistress of Novices, two someones. And Egwene's like, Nynaeve, you wouldn't. And then looks at Nynaeve's eyes, and he's like, okay, I believe you. There's no need to prove it. And Elaine's like, well, we have to practice. They ask more and more of us. If we did not practice on our own, we would never keep up. And I'm wondering if that's part of the training that I said I do, or it's like, what can you get away with when no one's watching in order to set yourself up for a better success at something you're planning on doing. So I wonder if that's supposed to be part of the tower. Like, can you figure out this secret thing, this secret rule? Like, you can do it, just don't get caught doing it. I'm assuming it's how they do, like, lying without lying. It's like, lie without lying and don't get caught doing it. But, and then he was like, well, you're not being cautious enough. What happens if you pull too much in? There's nobody there to, you know, prevent it from going haywire. You know, you need to be more afraid. I know. I've been in your shoes. I know what it's like. So you gotta understand this. And just because it's always there and you want to fill yourself with it doesn't mean you always should. And sometimes it's just difficult enough to say, just stop to myself. But, you know, I want more of it and I want all of it, but it would burn me to a crisp and I want it anyway. Just, you need to be more afraid. And Gwaith's like, well, I'm terrified actually. But even with that, even then, it's not enough. Then Elaine pipes in, is like, the only thing that terrifies me is washing dishes. Because, you know, everyone needs a good little humor every there once in a while. Like, well, it seems I have to do dishes every single day. But Egwene throws a pillow at her, and, you know, Elaine pulls it up, throws it back at her. But she's like, well, fine. I'm scared. I don't know why my teeth are not chattering. Elida said I'd be frightened that I wouldn't want to run away with the traveling. I would want to run away with the traveling people, but I didn't really understand. And then, you know, a man who drove oxen as hard as they drive us would be shunned. I'm tired all the time. I wake up tired, go to bed exhausted, and sometimes I'm afraid I'll just slip and channel more of the power than I can handle that I, you know, just trails off. The ironic part of this is that, you know, Elaine's, like, never really done hard labor, so she's, like, literally the funniest person when it comes to this, because she never had to do anything herself, like, beyond what she wanted to. Like, she help animals and stuff like that, and I mean, there's Rand as well, but in terms of, like, actual physical labor, like washing dishes or anything, she's never really done that. So she's just worried that she's going to become so exhausted that she's going to go off and channel more than she's supposed to, and then poof, there it is. Which is a valid reason to, like, be afraid of, like, that you become, at least to the point where you can't make good judgment calls and you do something bad, like burn yourself out. Now, you could argue that these types of things are part of the tower's training in order to push you into that and to kind of mold you into someone who gets better concentration, who has better control of themselves, and even when exhausted at the very last moment, they can still keep themselves composed. So you could argue that the way the training is set up is completely, you know, set up, designed to be one of those types of things. Like, everything you do is a lesson to learn. And I don't know if Robert Jordan was intending it for this to be this way, but I mean, it sounds better in theory than not. So I'd say that's probably what he was going with, but we don't know that I know of. He might've mentioned it at some point, but Egwene can relate. She's like, they lay next to each other and, you know, there's a small hole that had been bored through the wall and you can't really see it cause it's small, but you can talk after the lights go out and girls aren't allowed to leave their rooms. And Egwene had heard Elaine crying to herself to sleep more often than not. And pretty much Elaine's probably heard Egwene crying. And he was like, yeah, the traveling people are tempting, but, you know, whatever you do, it won't change what you do. You can't run from side R. And she didn't seem too fond of her own words. And Elaine's like, what do you see, man? Are we going to all become powerful as today? Are we going to spend the rest of our lives washing dishes as novices? And, you know, this is something that I dislike about Elaine, because she takes what Min says to the maximum literalness. So If Min's like, eh, you're going to jump off a tower in 2 days, she'd be like, that can't be, because it's bad. But if she's like, well, you jump off the tower in 2 days and land unharmed, she'd be like, all right, I'm going to go run and jump off a cliff. Whee! Because, you know, in 2 days, like, anything she does before that time period, she thinks that she's just, you know, untouchable. And that's something I really dislike about Elaine. But then again, I'm not particularly fond of Elaine to begin with. She's a fine character and all that, but gosh, she's not my favorite. Several of them are not my favorite, but Min's just like, well, I'm not really fond of reading friends. You know, friendship gets in the way of the reading, and it makes me want to put the best face on what I see. And that's what I don't do for you three anymore. You know, you're my friends, and nothing has really changed, but that's new. Nynaeve's like, what? What? What is it? Min's like, well, the danger. You're all in some form of danger, or at least you will be soon. Not really sure, but it's dangerous. And Nynaeve's like, yeah, you gotta take care. We all must. Gotta be, you know, not channel without someone to guide you. And of course, in that case, Nynaeve's thinking it's channeling that's gonna be the problem. And Egwene's like, I don't want to talk about it anymore. And Elaine's like, yeah, let's talk about something else. Min, if you put on a dress, I'll wager Gawain would ask you to go walking with him. It's like, how romantic. He's like, you know, he's been looking at you, but I think the breeches in the man's coat put him off. And she's like, well, I dress the way I want to, and I'm not going to change for a lord, even if he is your brother. And then she's like, kind of squinting and frowning, but then she's like, well, it's occasionally useful to, you know, appear as a boy. And Elaine's like, no one who looks twice believes you're a boy. Which is funny, because it's true. She's got too many curves. But Egwene becomes kind of uncomfortable. And I'd say tuck that away for later. But it might take a while. So Elaine was kind of forcing some form of a happy moment, even though she's obviously not feeling it that way, and Min's not really paying attention, and Nynaeve looks like she wants to warn him again. But then the door swings open again, and Egwene bounced to her feet to close it, trying to, like, do something else, but before she reached it, there's a dark-eyed Aes Sedai with blonde hair done in a multitude of braids stepping into the room. And Egwene's surprised to see that it's Leandrin Sedai. And she didn't know that Leandrin had returned to the White Tower, but you know, novices were sent for, and Aes Sedai wanted them, but it means no good, a sister coming herself. Now, a dark-eyed, that doesn't really mean much, except maybe she has, like, brown, hazel, or something darker than gray. I don't think necessarily black, so I would say it's probably more of a brown or a hazel for dark eyes. And then blonde hair done in a lot of braids. But I don't know if it means the entire thing's in a whole bunch of braids. Just a bunch of braids. And so she's like there, but, you know, it's five women crowded. And Leandrin's just kind of like there adjusting her red fringed shawl. Looking at them all over. Min doesn't move, but Elaine rises and the other three, you know, curtsy. But Nynaeve barely bends her knee, and Egwene didn't think Nynaeve would ever become, I don't know, accepting of the other people putting authority over her, which, I mean, Nynaeve does have some authority issues. But Leandrin looks at Nynaeve, just like, why are you here in the novice quarters? And obviously she's got an icy tone. It's not like she's wanting this. She's like, I'm visiting with friends. Leandrin Sedai, very, very belated. And she says this phrase, the accepted, they can have no friends among the novices. This you should have learned by this time, child. But it is as well I find you here, and you, pointing to Elaine and Min, are going to go. And Min's, like, getting up like she already was on her way out, and was like, ah, I will see you guys later. And kind of just walks out and strolls by Leandrin with a grin, which Leandrin didn't notice at all. Elaine gives Egwene and Nynaeve a worried look before she curtsies and leaves. Elaine closed the door behind her, and Leandrin's sitting there studying Egwene and Nynaeve, and Gawain's kind of nervous, but Nynaeve is just kind of like, yeah, I don't care. And Leandrin's like, you are two from the same village as the other boys that traveled with Moraine, right? And Egwene's like, oh, is there word of Rand? And she's like, oh, sorry. As Leandrin, you know, arches an eyebrow. He's like, I forget myself. And he was like, hey, have you heard of them? Pretty much, you know, they accepted, don't have any rule about speaking to an Aes Sedai unless spoken to. He's like, oh, you have concern for them. That's good, but they're in danger and you might be able to help them. And it's like, wait, how do you know they're in trouble? And Nynaeve's definitely kind of demanding an answer. And it's like, Leandrin's rosebud mouth tightens, but her tone doesn't change. It's like, well, since you're not aware of it, Moraine has sent letters to the White Tower concerning you. Moraine Sedai, she worries about you and your young friends. These boys are in a bit danger, so do you wish to help them or leave them to their fate? And Egwene says yes, at the same time Nynaeve's like, what kind of trouble? Why do you care about helping them? Which, Nynaeve has a valid reason to be skeptical of them, or of Leandrin, just because Reds and the Reds don't particularly care for men, for the most part. It's not necessarily a rule, but it's become kind of their ideological stance of their cause, I guess you could say. So it's rare for an Aes Sedai to join the Reds and like men. Some do, but it's very rare. And Nynaeve was still looking at her like, and I thought you didn't like Moraine. Why are you trying to help them? Leandrin's like, hey, do not presume too much. To be accepted here is not to be a sister. Accepted and novices alike listen when a sister speaks. And they do as they're told. So she breathes and goes on, coldly serene. But she's got angry white spots on her cheeks. He's like, I'm sure you will serve a cause, and you learned that to serve it, you have to work with those whom you dislike. And I've worked with many, many whom I would not share a room with if it left me alone. Would you not work alongside the one you hated worst if it would save your friends? And then he was like, well, but you could have told us what kind of danger they're in. He's like, the danger comes from Shael Ghul. They are hunted. As I understand, they come before, as they were once hunted before. And if you come with me, some dangers at least may be eliminated. Do not ask how, for not to tell you, but I tell you flatly it is so. Egwene's like, we will come. And Nynaeve's like, go where? And Egwene's like, really, Nynaeve? And Nynaeve's like, I'm not going to just ask blindly. Like, I'm not going to just blindly show up. I'm going to ask to see like where we're going. And so Leandrin's like, well, we're going to Toman Head. And Egwene's just like, say what now? And Nynaeve's like, there's a war on Toman Head. Does this danger have something to do with Arda Hawkwing's armies? And then Leandrin's like, psh, you believe rumors. Even if they were true, is that enough to stop you? I thought you called these men your friends. And of course, she's has this kind of twist to the words. That she's obviously like, psh, I wouldn't. And Egwene's like, we will come. And Nynaeve opens her mouth, but Egwene goes on, we will go, Nynaeve. If Rand needs our help, and Matt and Baron, we have to give it. And Nynaeve's like, I know, but I want to know why, and why us? What can we do that Moraine, or you, Leandrin, cannot? And Leandrin's cheeks get even whiter from anger. And Egwene realizes Nynaeve had forgot the honorific in addressing her, but what she said was, you guys come from the same village. In some way I do not understand, but you're connected to them. Beyond that, I'm not sure, and I can say no more. And none of those foolish questions I will answer. Will you come with me for their sake? And she waits, and then when they nod, a visible tension leaves her. And she's like, good. You'll meet at the northernmost edge of the Ogier Grove an hour before sunset with your horses and whatever you will need for the journey. Tell no one of this. And then he was like, we're not supposed to leave the tower grounds without permission. And it's like, you have my permission, but tell no one. And at this point, I'm thinking, like, we have permission, but we can't tell anybody that we have permission, so how are we supposed to show that we have permission? I was confused. And then she goes on, is like, nobody at all. The Black Aja walks the halls of the White Tower. And I'm like, big moment, you know, it's like, color me shocked, people. Dark friends exist everywhere. But Aes Sedai are like, you know, immune to that. To what? Power? Or I should say the lust of power, I should say. And Egwene's like, what? What? And then he's like, well, I thought Aes Sedai denied the existence of that. And Leandra's mouth tightens in a sneer. He's like, heh, many do, but time and guide and approaches, and the time time leaves when denials can be made. But the Black Aja, you know, it's the opposite of everything which the tower stands for. But it exists. It is everywhere. Any woman could belong to it and serve the Dark One. If your friends are pursued by the Shadow, do you think the Black Aja will leave you two alive and free to help them? Tell no one. No one. Or you might not be alive to reach Tomon Head. 1 hour before sunset. Do not fail me. And then she's gone, closing the door firmly behind her. And Egwene just collapses on the bed with her hands on her knees. And she's like, "That she's a Red. She can't know about Rand. If she did..." And I'm thinking to myself, hey, morons, there's a hole in your wall. Don't be talking about stuff. And you're literally saying, hey, she can't know about Rand, where literally anyone could hear. And you just said, she's Red and he's Rand. She can't possibly know about him. What do you think the next person to hear that's going to say? And then he's like, yeah, she can't know. I just wish I knew why Red wanted to help or why she's willing to work with Moraine. I'd have sworn either of them would give the other water, or wouldn't give them other water if they're dying of thirst. And she's like, you think she's lying? I was like, well, she's Aes Sedai. And I'm like, okay, Nynaeve, if she's Aes Sedai, she can't lie. But she just acknowledged the Black Aja exists, which would be true. Because if it was false, she would prove that she was a Black Aja. And if she's true, then she just acknowledged that the Black Aja exists. Which means that there are women who can lie. So you literally just backed yourself into a corner. Quite literally. And you don't even realize it. He's like, I'd wager my best silver pin against a blueberry that every word she said was true. But I don't know if we heard it the way we thought we did. And I'm like, yes, Nynaeve, I don't think you heard the same thing that she was saying if she's saying it in a harmful way. So either she's truly disgusted and wants to, you know, go help, but doesn't want to help because Moraine. Or she's lying and you have other problems. So it's... you're literally arguing yourself into a circle where you can't leave. And Egwene's like, oh no, the Black Aja. There's most no mistaking what she said about that. And then he's like, yeah, but she forestalled us asking anyone for advice. And now that, how do we trust anyone? Well, they help us indeed. So Min and Elaine come bustling in, slamming the door behind them. Are you really going to go? Min asks. And Elaine's like, the tiny hole. And I'm just like, yeah, you guys are morons. It's like, we listened to my room. We heard everything. And Egwene, you know, looks at Nynaeve and trying to figure out how much they'd overheard. And Nynaeve's like, oh man, they made a cipher about Rand. I'm like, yeah, because you're a moron. And he was like, you have to keep this to yourselves. Leandrin's probably arranged permission from Shirion for us to go, but even if she hasn't, you know, they start searching the tower from the top to bottom tomorrow. You can't say a word. And Min's like, don't tell anybody and keep it to myself. What are you talking about? I'm going with you. All I do is every day is try to explain one brown or sister another something I don't understand myself. And I can't even go to a walk without the Armorlin herself popping out and asking you what to read or whoever see and blah, 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 blah. When the woman asks you something, you know, there doesn't seem to be any way out of it. I just have read half the White Tower for her, but she always wants another demonstration. I just need an excuse to leave. And this is it. And she's like, got this determination. She's like, I'm not going to, like, I'll argue this. Like, this is a done deal. But Egwene's like, why are you so determined to go with us, man, when you could just leave whenever you wanted to? But she didn't have much time to wonder when Elaine's like, I'm going too. And then he's like, okay, Elaine. We're, you know, the kith and kin. of these boys from Evans Field. You're the daughter heir of Andor. If you disappear, the White Tower could probably start a war between the White Tower and Andor. Like, Nynaeve's like really smart in this instance. I wish she was this smart all the time, but she's smart in this instance. And she's like, ah, Mother wouldn't start a war with Tarvalin if they dried and salted me, which they may be trying to do. And if you three can go off and have an adventure, you needn't think I'm going to stay here and wash dishes, scrub floors, and have some accepted berating me because I didn't make the fire the exact shade of blue she wanted. Gawain will die from envy when he finds out. And Elaine grins and tugs playfully at Egwene's hair. And he's like, well, if you leave Rand lying about Luce, I might have the chance to pick him up. And Egwene's like, I don't think either of us is going to have him. And she says it kind of sadly. He's like, well, then we'll find whoever he does choose and make her life miserable. Which I think is funny. Tuck that away for later. But he couldn't be fool enough to choose someone when he could have one of us. I mean, come on, Egwene, you could smile. I know he's yours. I just feel free. I've never had an adventure, and, you know, neither of us will cry ourselves to sleep on an adventure. You know, if we do, we'll make sure the Gleeman have leave that part out. And he's like, this is foolish. We're going to Tilmun Head. You've heard the news and the rumors. It'll be dangerous. You got to stay here. And he's like, oh, I know what Leandrin Zedai said about, you know, the Black Ajo. But she dropped almost a whisper at the name. He's like, well, how safe will it be here if they are here? If Mother even suspected the Black Ajah really existed, they would pitch, or she would pitch me into the middle of a battle to get me away from. And they're like, but Elaine. And she's like, hey, there's only one for you to stop me coming, and that's to tell the Mistress of Novices. We'll make a pretty picture. All three of us line up in her study, or four of us. I don't think Min would, you know, get away unscathed. So you're going to tell Sheriam Sedai I'm coming. I should say, so since you're not going to. And then he was like, fine. Men try talking some sense to her, and Men's like leaning against the door, squinting at Elaine, and now she shook her head. He's like, well, I think she has to come with the rest of you. I see the danger around all of you more clearly now. Not clearly enough to make it out, but something's has something to do with you guys going. And that's why it's clear that you have to be more certain about going. And then he's like, but there's no reason for her to come. And Min's like, hey, she's linked to those boys as much as you or Egwene or me. She's a part of it, whatever it is. Part of the pattern, I suppose, and I said I would say. And Elaine's like, oh, I am? What part, Min? And I'm just like, oh, freaking crying out loud, Elaine. Blood and ashes. You're a flaming daughter of the sands at this point. Like, your brain is dry as a riverbed that has never seen water. And Min's like, well, I can't see it clearly, but sometimes I wish I wouldn't read people at all. Most people aren't satisfied with what I say anyway. And he's like, well, if we're going to go, then we got to make plans. And she seemed to like argue all the time before, but now that we have a course of action, know what we're going to do, she goes right to the practicalities, which is something I can't appreciate for Nynaeve because a lot of people don't handle that very well. And they had to get, like, the things they had to take with them, how cold it could be by the time they reached Tilmun Head, you know, how to get their horses in the stables without being stopped, all the fun little details about planning for an adventure secretly away from everyone else but the one person who told you they gave you permission but told you not to tell anybody that she gave you permission, so you have no idea that you're supposed to have permission to get out of there. Fun, isn't it? So, Egwene's just like, I wonder what dangers Min saw for us and what threatens Rand. But she only knows of one danger that could threaten him, and she does not like the thought of that. And the danger, obviously, would be gentling, but I feel like there are other dangers as there, like getting stabbed and dying, or tripping and falling and breaking your neck, or smashing your head on a rock, I don't know, drowning in water. There's a lot of things you should be worried about, dying and stuff, not just, oh, I lost my ability to channel. But she's thinking in her head, hold on, Rand, hold on, you wool-headed idiot. I'll help you somehow. I'm like, how exactly? But okay. We'll let you have that one, I guess. And that's the end of the chapter. Woo! So, yay. definitely an interesting chapter in terms of a lot of random parts that they kind of just crammed together. First we're talking, or first we're doing magic without having permission. Then we're, you know, going about and talking about boys. And then we're getting talked to by an Aes Sedai who's not very happy. And learn about the Aes Sedai that possibly are Black Aja. And yeah, all these wonderful, wonderful things that we totally wanted to have. So yeah, there's that. And now they're planning on an adventure and trying to talk people out of it. So we have two extra people showing up and they didn't want them to show up. And it's all just crazy. Which I think is actually funny because if you look at it from the perspective of the Ammerlin and any Aes Sedai who have met Egwene and Nynaeve and knowing their potential, if they leave the tower, it might as well be Elaine leaving the tower. Because Elaine's like a political point in which, you know, they want to keep safe because it makes them look good. And if you have an Aes Sedai that, you know, ends up becoming a queen of a nation, it's kind of a big deal. Now, how that would ever work, I don't really understand, because a country wouldn't allow an Aes Sedai to become the queen because they'd fear that the White Tower would literally just control everything that country does. So I feel like the nobility and peasantry would not be particularly fond of that concept unless there was something that states that, you know, you have to stay out of our politics. You can't just participate because you want to. But I'm sure we'll find out in the future how that works out. But yeah, so that's it for the chapter and for the episode. What'd you guys think? Did you enjoy it? Did you hate it? Did you love it? I don't know. If you'd like to let me know, you can always reach out to me through email, which is talesofaredarm@gmail.com. You can also reach out on Facebook, which is just Tales of a Red Arm, or on Twitter @talesofaredarm. And either let me know through a DM or just message on one of the things posted. Whichever one, doesn't really matter. And maybe we can clear up some questions or keep trucking along with the current content, and maybe we'll have something fun coming out extra-wise. So, yeah, thanks everybody for hanging out. Next episode, we'll cover Chapter 39, and we're getting close. We got like a quarter of the book left, so we're definitely almost there, because I'm pretty sure there's only 50 chapters. There are 50 chapters, but the last chapter is almost always like a page. So we essentially have 11 more chapters. So 11 more episodes, we'll be done with this book and move on to The Dragon Reborn. So we have that to look forward to. So once again, thanks guys for hanging out and listening along, and hopefully you learned something interesting about the world and the cultures and all that fun stuff. But yeah. Hopefully next time we can cover something hopefully a little bit more exciting. I mean, this has some exciting moments, but it was a little bland compared to the usual stuff that we usually go over. But hopefully that doesn't stop you. So we'll see you around, guys, next time. And until then.
Night and dance all day, and on the girls we'll spend our pay, and when we're done then we'll away to dance with Jack of the Shadows. We'll toss the dice however they fall, and snuggle the girls be they short or tall, and follow young Matt wherever he calls to dance with Jack of the Shadows. We'll toss the dice however they fall, and snuggle the girls be they short or tall, then follow Lord Matt wherever he calls to dance with Jack of the Shadows. We'll give a yell with a bloody curse, and hog the maids, it could be worse, as ride away with the dark ones first to dance with Jack of the Shadows. Yeah!